The true sound of a missing person's case. The sound of the missing and the unfound isn't a wind that howls across a remote landscape. It isn't the hiss and roar of an angry sea that barrels onto the shore. It's not a house full of people who mean well, offering help or support. Or the clang of casserole dishes with names on masking tape on the bottom that spread across the kitchen counter and fill the fridge. The sound of a missing person's case is the slight rustling of a flyer moving in the breeze, in a foyer of a restaurant, or on a light pole, or a bulletin board with the word missing in bold across the top. The faces are all different, but the sound is the same. But the loudest sound is the silence that comes later, when the flyers are gone and the house is empty, before your loved one is found. Long after the flyers and the friends have faded and fallen away. But what happens when the families and friends aren't believed? When they are told that the person isn't missing at all? That they're an adult and can do as they please? When a family's concern isn't taken seriously? What sound does that missing person's case make as it roars across the lives of those left behind? Brownsmead, Oregon is a small inland coastal community tucked onto the edge of the Columbia River. Its landscape is dotted by dairy farms that straddle wetlands and sloughs that ebb and flow with the influences of Oregon's rain and the tides of the river. A persistent wind presses against the flat expanse that is funneled through a smattering of hills and crags. An old store, now closed, and a community hall still stand, but it's far from abandoned. Families dating back to the turn of the century still live there, and it's still the family home of Martha Bentham Evans, last seen on the evening of February 10th, 1990. Thirty-two-year-old mother of two Martha, or Marty to her friends, had spent a chilly but sunny Saturday as a bridesmaid in her friend's wedding. Friends and family had gathered at the wedding reception in Brownsmead, which spilled over to the Lager and the High Climber Room, a local bar and lounge. After dropping off her son with family, Marty made a few phone calls, borrowed $4 from her stepfather to put gas in the truck she was borrowing from her brother, and headed off toward town, promising to meet her family in Astoria at the Hong Kong restaurant later that night. When Marty failed to join them at the restaurant, family simply assumed her plans had changed. But when an unusual snow began to fall and Marty failed to return by morning, her family felt instantly that something wasn't right. They know she had stopped in Svensson at the D&D market for gas, because when the truck wouldn't restart, she had called her brother Mark for a jump start. Still wearing the bridesmaid dress and her hair dotted with baby's breath, she waved goodbye and headed off toward Astoria. Now, almost 30 years later, Marty and the truck have never been seen again. The last picture of Marty was taken the day she went missing. She stands in a foyer with the wedding party, holding a bouquet, with a crown of flowers in her hair. Head slightly tilted to the side, she's smiling with her whole body, the free spirit glowing from the inside.
Hi.
This is just you and me.
Oh, okay.
No, you know me here.
And you're Gloria. Nice to meet you. I'm Anne.
Marty's mother is small in stature, with kind eyes and a steady demeanor. She's surrounded by photos of her 8 children and 75 grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Linda, Marty's older sister is confident and direct. Her eyes are bright, and she laughs with her whole body. There's a fire in the potbelly stove as we sit around the kitchen table, photos of Marty passing between us.
Close together. Actually, Linda and Marty were only 10 and a half months apart.
Yeah. It was close.
Not quite.
Tell me about yourselves first to kind of break the ice, if you want, kind of get comfortable talking with me. Or if you want to tell me, you know, what Marty was like as a kid and as a teenager and what it was like sharing a room with her and being so
and
close
other
in
siblings.
Age.
We never even ever had just two in a room.
Yeah.
It was four of us at least. Yeah, we're both 62 right now. So, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, so I'm the oldest. Obviously, this is my mother. Mm-hmm. And our real dad was in the picture off and on until I was 15. And then she married my stepdad, Joe, who was a wonderful man. He married a woman with seven children. And I'm the old, even though I was the oldest in the family, Marty was always bigger than me. Until we got, what?
11.
11, 12 years old, and I kind of caught up with her. And we kind of stayed the same then. But she was always tiny, you know, I kind of got a little bit bigger. But she was always headstrong and kind of did her own thing, despite what any of us said or did, you know. Yeah, when we were in Portland, I was a freshman in high school, so that would put Marty in eighth grade. But she, like, took off and was gone.
About a week
at one point.
A different time.
Was that before you moved here?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you guys grew up in Portland?
Nope.
Kids or?
Like, we were there twice. So probably Portland was the place we lived the longest, I guess, all together.
Mm-hmm. They went to Lentz.
Oh, yeah.
Lentz Elementary, and then I went to Marshall High School.
Okay.
I believe I was the only one in the family who went to high school there.
Marty should have.
Marty should have, but she didn't.
Marty was a freshman, but she didn't go to school.
She just went whenever
she went in. I took her up every day, her and Linda, and she must have walked in the front and out the back.
Out the back, because I'd come home and she wouldn't. So, because by then she found a different set of friends, and like I said, she did her own thing.
What do you think she did during the day?
I don't know, smoked cigarettes and hung out with her friends. I don't know, they didn't do games and stuff then. I think she hung out with people that were older, because she didn't, you know, just running around, going in the malls. You know, it's the early 70s. You know, and at that point, we were pretty much all of us with Mom, and our dad was, I don't know where he was, wherever. But we're always stable with her, so.
Right. So then how did you end up over here? I mean, Brown's meet him up.
My husband, when I got married to Joe, he got a job working for his uncle cutting shingles on Ackerstadt Road.
Which and is in Napa, so the other side of Napa.
When the kids got out of school that year, then we moved down here. They bought a trailer up there, and they wanted to run my life, so I thought, I want to find a different place to live. And this friend of Joyce's.
I don't know where we got this independent attitude at.
I went home that day and I told Joe, I said, if you want to live with me and the kids, you will move with me because I'm moving to Brownsmead.
That was 1973.
Mm-hmm. Was that a huge culture shock for everybody?
Sort of.
Not for me.
Didn't matter. We were kind of our own tribe, so. You know.
Yeah.
You know, but it seemed like Marty was always a little bit of a rebellious, do her own thing sort of girl. And so for her to take off wasn't a real big outstretch, except for the fact that she had children. That's the only thing that would have kept her, you know. And she had custody of her son, so she would have never left him. We already know that.
No. He was at my house when she disappeared. She'd been in a wedding, and she came down to... I thought she was going to change clothes, but she didn't. She wanted to leave the dress on because she had flowers in her hair and didn't want to take them out.
Baby's breath.
And when she left here, she'd been drinking way too much, and we tried everything we could to get her talked into staying at least overnight. And then, well, if she still wanted to go somewhere, go somewhere. And Andrew was here, her son.
She went to the wedding, then she went to the reception.
Mm-hmm.
Then did she come here or did she go to the lager next?
They went and drank somewhere.
They went and drank at the lager. I'm not sure when it was. When did she bring Andrew down here? What's where that timeline kind of
right great? When the wedding was over. It happened right in there.
Because that's when she wanted to take Andrew. That's right, because she told me at the wedding she insisted it.
She wanted to go to
my house, and I said no. My kids are all at their other grandma's. No.
I said I would take it.
So he was here?
Yeah.
Brought him.
Overnight?
Yeah. And the strange part about it is Marty didn't have any money. And she wouldn't take any money. She took $4. Joe gave her $4. And she took that because she wanted to buy gas for her car.
Truck.
Yeah, a little
pickup. My brother's truck.
And when she left, I had a weird vibe. Because when she left, I washed the dishes, washed the dishes. And Marty went by me, almost. And then she came, right, not quite by me, but just in back of me. Then she came up. And she gave me a great big hug, which that wasn't unusual.
No,
but she kissed me, too. And she said, bye, Mom. And when Joe tried to give her money, all she would take is $4. And he had other money. He was going to give her $20 or $30 or what. And she wouldn't take it. She said, you need it worse than I do. And I thought, that's a funny thing
to say.
Mm-hmm. And then when she left...
She wasn't one to really take things from people anyway. She was a giver,
Was Joe still, he was working, right? Still cutting shingles?
No. At that point, he'd went to Fallen Trees. For
Crown Zeller back.
Yeah, he was Fallen Trees at that point.
Out of Seaside.
Because after they left up the hill, he wasn't on the shingle mill anymore. It's a really big story, there's lots of details that you go back and try to remember.
But when she did not come home that night, she still wasn't there in the morning, I knew something was wrong. And I don't know if it was a mother's intuition or what. But I absolutely knew, and of course Andrew asked, where's Mommy? And I didn't know. When she left here, she was headed to Tim Barrett's house.
That's what she said.
That's what she was headed. But Tim swore she never got there, never went there.
But so, when she said she was going to Tim, she'd also told us at the reception that she, because we were all wanting to meet at the Hong Kong, and she said, well, somewhere during the night, after I get whatever I need done, I'll meet you guys there. We'll... She didn't, and we just kind of shrugged our shoulders and wasn't really that big a deal.
But she never came home. Never.
I don't even think she got to town myself. But
I don't either.
So nobody seen. There was people that thought they seen or spotted, but you know who I think they were seeing was my other sister. Rhonda and her look so much alike.
Did anybody see the truck? They said that they saw her. But
they never
the truck?
Saw.
Well,
the truck.
They had to have seen that truck unless she was in a building, because the truck was with her. It never ever showed up ever.
Right.
Yeah. And she took off. Would have been headed west on Highway 30 when my brother seen her. She took. There's just a little jaunt there to the highway, and he saw her drive off.
She got $4 in gas and a soda or something.
A beer or something. Maybe one beer.
A candy bar. Something.
It was something else. Yeah.
Okay. So she spent all her money. At what point do you think that she was like, where's my purse? Or do you think that
she had her purse with her.
That's what's weird. Okay, this is what I don't understand. And we questioned the cops. How did she have her purse when she took off?
You saw her with the purse?
That I'm not sure of.
She had her purse when she was here.
Okay, so the purse. Okay, so the purse ended up in Sally Rudette's trunk when she was on her honeymoon. But they didn't think that was weird. I thought that was awful odd. She gets home from her honeymoon in 6 days, and there's Marty's purse in her trunk.
And then didn't Sally have her clothes she was going to change into? Her leather jacket. I've still got it. Her purse and her leather jacket.
Which everybody thought she was wearing until we figured out it was in her trunk.
Well, she told me that she wasn't going to put it on because she had them flowers in her hair. And I said, well, that doesn't make any difference. Oh, yes, because I might not be as much of like a lady. I mean, I think that's what she was insinuating. If she put jeans and a leather jacket on. But she put the jacket on over her dress.
She did
but
do that.
But she must have taken that off somewhere.
Oh, somebody has the jacket. I thought she was still on.
Because I have it.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, it's right in my closet.
Oh, I thought she was still wearing it when she disappeared. So what'd she have on with her dress when Mikey seen her?
A blouse and some, the wedding stuff still.
Yeah, but no coat or nothing?
And she had the leather jacket on with the dress.
But then how'd you get it then?
I guess evidently Sally gave it to me.
I know, but what I'm saying is when she left the D&D, supposedly had still had her black leather coat on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how'd you get it?
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Cold Coast on Coast Community Radio, a show dedicated to finding and identifying the missing and unidentified persons of Tillamook, Pacific, and Clatsop counties. Before the break, we introduced you to the missing persons case of Martha Bentham Evans, a young mother of two who disappeared in 1990 after heading into town from Svensson. She and the truck she was driving that night have never been seen again. The following phone interview is with Don Bentham, Marty's younger brother. He had loaned her his 1984 brown Ford Ranger when she had moved back to town just a few months earlier.
Hello?
Hi, is this Don?
Yep.
Hi, this is Ann.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
Okay.
Good. Do you want to tell me a little bit about who Marty was as a kid, what it was like? She was your big sister or your little sister?
She's number two in the line of eight of us. Seven of us in the first 7 years, and then Brad came along 10 years later, 12 years later.
Who's the oldest?
That would be Linda.
Okay.
She's the oldest. And then Marty, and then Joyce.
Okay.
And then me. And then Rhonda. And then Mike. And then Tony. And then Brad. So, we were a pretty close-knit family because we didn't have a lot of money. So, we spent a lot of time, with our friends and whatever. Marty was probably a little wilder than the other two older sisters of mine. She was always good looking, and so that always made her sought after by other people,
Yeah.
And she had boyfriends at a young age, and she ran away from home like when she was 15 with her boyfriend and all that stuff,
The show always eventually came back.
Correct. That was just in her high school days, and then after she actually moved out of home, she spent more time at home than she did when she was at home,
Yeah. I know that the last time Marty was seen, she was in your truck, right?
Correct.
Okay.
That was a truck that was not paid for.
Oh, really?
No, I was making payments on that truck. I had gotten a job at Wana a few years earlier, and Marty needed something to drive when she moved into the area, and I had just purchased a new vehicle that I've always had plenty of cars,
Mm-hmm.
And so I told her that, this one here, is a good runner and all that stuff, and make my payments on it while you're driving it and decide if you want to buy it, blah, 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 and she was all happy and all that stuff. So when she disappeared, I knew right away that she didn't go on.
She wouldn't have left you like that. She wouldn't have left you in a look like that.
She wouldn't just left me hanging with a car payment.
And there was never any rumors of it popping up anywhere else?
No. There was rumors, because of the people that she was involved with about the vehicle getting scrapped and all this different stuff. But because the car had payments on it, it was in a loan deal, it didn't make sense, because of PIN numbers and all that stuff.
And then you had to continue paying for it, correct?
Correct.
And how long?
Another 3 years.
Another 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Now, you got to remember that the night that she disappeared, it snowed.
It was that night.
Yeah. And so that very morning when she didn't show up anywhere and we went looking for her, there was snow on the ground. Following the path of where she had went, blah, 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 and there was no evidence of anybody going in the ditch or anything like that.
And it snowed a lot, right? enough that it stuck.
Yeah, I mean,
it
was an inch or two.
And so by Monday, you guys are really worried. And so you call the authorities.
Correct.
Okay. Did they seem to react, or did they seem
to react, you know, and they seemed to be going through the motions and doing all the things, but the interviews that they had made, you know, when somebody took a polygraph and didn't pass it, why didn't they follow through with that? You know, that's what I don't get.
So they were giving interviews and they eventually polygraphed people?
Correct.
Over the decades, rumors and theories of what happened to Marty that night have created more questions than answers. Confusion over the timeline of events that night, an appointment Marty had with an attorney for custody the Monday after she disappeared, a drug bust gone wrong in a nearby town, and a deathbed confession have all played into those rumors and conspiracies. But the bottom line is that Marty's whereabouts are still unknown.
And we had hired a private investigator, and I think, I'm trying to think of how long it was until we got a private investigator. It was a month or two after she had disappeared that we had. But, you know, so many different hearsay things have gone on over the years, and you know, deathbed confessions or any of that stuff, but.
Do you know who heard the confession? Was it anybody in the family, or was it hearsay, like third party?
It was a third party. It wasn't anybody in the family.
Would you say that person's, like, credible?
At the time, it's been pretty credible.
Okay. It's been 29 years,
mm-hmm.
coming up on 30.
Correct.
How did your life change that day?
Well, it was just like a loss, you know. It was pretty incredible to, you know, because I was fairly close to her. You know, she wouldn't be driving my truck. I would make a payment on if we weren't, you know, fairly close. There's the substance of loss, you know, and I could just feel the loss, you know, and the lack of closure has never been easy.
What do you feel in your gut happened, do you think?
I have a tendency to believe the deathbed confession that they buried her in the truck. Have a hunch on where that's at. Didn't put it together until many years later on where he was talking about. But the person that owns that property will not let us do any search.
Wow.
And it takes a long time for metal to rot away, you know, even when it's buried. It's a scene that makes the most sense, but you know, it's a mystery for sure.
She wasn't declared missing until 2005. It sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Can you believe that?
I mean, why?
Why
you know
did it
why?
Take so long?
Yeah.
I have no idea why it took so long. A lot of things seem to not quite make sense, which always leads you to suspect that there's something more involved than just what meets the eye. You know?
You would think
that something like that would be a big issue and you know.
I'm shocked that it took
15
that
years
long.
For yeah. Isn't that something? One of the issues that we dealt with was her, with people taking the signs down. And why was that never followed up? Because normally if somebody's taking signs down, it's because they know something.
Right. Wow.
It's just very suspicious.
Right.
Of all the different things that happened on, you know. And what do we do, you know? What do you do? I know in years past we tried to get a copy of the records and they wouldn't give us anything.
Well,
but I do know the last time we requested we were just plain denied because it was an open case. The biggest thing is somebody knows something somewhere.
But, you know, we would investigate different things that come up, you know, body found here, bones found there, da-da. And they'd say, well, we don't have her in our database. And we're like, why? And, then, you know, then they look it up and they dig and finally find it.
Mm-hmm.
But why ain't she popping up if it's a semi-local person?
I think how they present it, she's got multiple names. So.
Well, there's Marty, there's Martha, there's mm-hmm. Benton, mm-hmm. LaVon, mm-hmm. Evans, you know.
And so I think
but her
confused.
Main name was Martha.
It's Martha LaVon.
And then she was Marty.
I noticed that there was probably four main posters made at first. And each one was a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Martha LaVon, Benton Evans, Marty. And you know, there was one, bless their hearts,
organized.
On the borderline of Nevada, California, on the way to Reno. Then people kept that poster there until probably 2 years ago. And it was gray and green and yellow and everything. Well, that lady, I remember going there and talking to her. She was so nice. And she said no matter what, they wouldn't take that poster down. So it sat up there for 25 years at their store.
Photos of Martha Benton Evans and a sample photo of the truck she was driving the night she disappeared are posted on Cold Coast's Facebook and Instagram accounts. And you can find those by searching for @ColdCoastRadio on Facebook or Instagram. If you have any information regarding this open missing persons case, please contact Detective Matt Beeson of the Oregon State Police regarding NamUs case number MP9540 at 503-861-0781. My name is Anne, and you've been listening to Cold Coast on KMUN in Astoria, Oregon. Join me next month on the first Thursday at 9 a.m., for the next episode, where we'll cover another open cold case from our community.